in order to collaborate or for something to turn into something, right? So the execution on whatever you're collaborating on, you have to be aware enough. And I think most people aren't. Like, that is why they rely on a leader of the group, right? To be able to delegate to them.
Specifically, we're going to talk about collaboration and connection. And I kind of want to mold the two together, because when I'm thinking collaboration, I'm imagining even like in college or high school when we had a group project and we were required to collaborate to get a good grade.
You know, I found this working in the corporate world as well. You know, if your partner that you're working alongside within a project or in the same role as you is the same as you, then that's a recipe for disaster. I think it's super important to really ask yourself, what is your superpower?
But you look at that, right? And it takes skills. And skills, you can build some of that passion. And then the other piece of that is, what are people willing to pay for? What are people currently paying for, right? And that's where you're going to be able to add value.
Wonderful listeners and fantastic watchers, welcome to the Lunch Break ABCs. Today, we are joined by the Lunch Break team. We've got Ben Albert. We've got Christine Smith from the Hangar Studio. We've got Andrew Biernat over here, if you're watching, and myself, Brandon Eastman. And this is episode 3 of the Lunch Break ABCs. We've been having a lot of fun during this series, not just because we love each other's company and we bring different insights from each of us, but because you are the one who chooses the topic that we talk about. And today, our topic is all about how you can grow your business with the magic of collaborative connections. And we asked you to vote on several different topics. One of them was connection, the other one being collaboration. We went with those two. Another one was content, and the last one was co-working. And really, co-working kind of goes along with what we're talking about today, so I'm sure that it will find its way into the conversation. But I think that you guys will find that when we talk about collaboration and connection today, it ties into every single part of life aside from business. If you can collaborate better with a business partner, with a team, with even the work that you outsource to other people, then you'll be able to collaborate on a deeper level and a greater level with the personal relationships that you have in your life. So I know this conversation will go in many different directions, but I want to hear from us here in the chat. What do you believe goes and is at the heart of collaborative connections, at least from your experience? Let's go over here to Mr. Ben Albert. Ben, you got a haircut since we last talked last episode, brother.
It was actually a wig last time.
I would never have known.
You couldn't tell, you know. It's No Shave November, though, so the beard's growing on me. But
there it is.
Yeah, you said this is the third one. It feels like I've been talking to you guys for 50. Then I realized we were only on C, and then it makes sense that we're on the third one because we're doing all the ABCs, right? For anyone who doesn't know, we're walking through every ABC, so we're on C. And it's a good point that collaboration, connection, even co-working and content all could be mashed together if we wanted to be. Specifically, we're going to talk about collaboration and connection, and I kind of want to mold the two together, because when I'm thinking collaboration, I'm imagining even like in college or high school when we had a group project and we were required to collaborate to get a good grade. I feel like you can collaborate in a transactional sense. You can collaborate with coworkers because it's required. But connection is almost like a whole new slice of the pie that if we can collaborate but connect at the same time with people that have a similar vision, a similar purpose, a similar style, and really like create ripples, ripple effects, you know, Christine, really create ripples and make changes. I feel like collaborating can be transactional, but when we bring in the connection piece, when we bring in like the emotional piece and the vision-driven piece, you guys can agree or disagree. I just feel like the collaborating is even that much better, and that's why I love doing these ABCs with you guys, because yeah, we're collaborating, but we get to connect on a business level and an emotional level while we do it, and for me, that's a ton of fun. So as always, I'm glad to be here.
Hmm. I love
and
that.
That's our show.
It's so that's true, though, brother.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about, I mean, what are we doing right now, right? We're connecting with each other, talking about ideas together, and we are connecting, right? We're connecting, collaborating, putting all this together, making something useful for other people to consume and use and utilize. And at the same time, we're being fulfilled at the same time, right? I treasure this hour. I had a conflict come up that I could have, you know, tried to push this call or just bailed. And I was like, sorry, work. I gotta go be here. You know, 'cause one of those things that, like, to me, this is extremely fulfilling, and it's really powerful when you get to talk about and share with the people that are in our networks. And so, you know, Ben talks about this a lot, and, you know, I'm sure we'll circle back to him to share a little bit deeper, but the idea that, like, collaborating on stuff is one of the best ways that you can actually truly deeply connect with somebody on something is, you know, for what we do, you know, we've been on a couple networking calls together, had some chats, but the best way that we've gotten to know each other has actually been being on each other's shows, right? Or recording a show together, right? We're connecting on an entirely different level because we're choosing to collaborate on something. And I think, Ben, you brought up a good point. There's kind of those two types of collaboration, right? There's forced collaboration and there's collaboration by choice. And maybe we can kind of pick those two ideas apart, right? What the collaboration by choice feels like and means, and what collaboration by force kind of feels like and means. But I'll kind of throw those two ideas up there and see who wants to dive in on that.
I just want to touch on, like, how I see collaboration and connection. Obviously, you know, being the networking Obi-Wan, Jedi, whatever you want to call me this week. I agree that, like, you build a connection with someone in order to collaborate with them. But I think there's a few other layers that happen first. So for that connection to happen, right? And I look at it as like a spark. So that spark can be, like, started when somebody puts time, effort, or communication in. And those three things don't all have to happen at the same time, but one of them has to happen in order for that connection to even be worthy of moving forward into the collaboration stage. We all take risks in regards to business and even our personal lives. So sometimes we might jump ahead, and we're the ones that, oh, I'll put the effort in, I'll put the time into this person because I think there might be an opportunity, and I'll immediately collaborate with them before the connection has really been, like, built, even if it's so small, right? And sometimes that backfires in our face and sometimes it works really well. But I think when you think about how that kind of is built and how some of us have these amazing relationships and sometimes they just don't last, you know, is it because of one of those factors going away, or is it just that relationship ran its course? But I think when you constantly are collaborating, right? So you've already established that connectability with somebody or a group of people, that collaboration, I feel like, seals the deal. And when you do it more often, it seals the deal even more. Like, the likeliness of that relationship going away is going to be unlikely because of the fact that you've had this other experience with that person that you're not going to have with someone else unless you do another sort of collaboration. And collaboration isn't just in business. And I think that's something important to clarify. It could literally be, like, doing something, like helping someone else out. Like, I'm volunteering for, there's a Toys for Tots warehouse close to where I live. They're 3 weeks behind right now in sorting things for the Christmas season because their original warehouse, something happened. So they have, like, a temporary solution. So they've been asking for volunteers, but I get to go collaborate with other people who are putting time and effort into making this connection specifically for a purpose, right? For Toys for Tots. But there's a certain type of person that's going to be there. Right? Like, they're not going to be complaining the entire time, like, oh, I have to go and sort all this stuff. No, they're going to be excited and, like, oh, I'm so glad I got to take, you know, part of this. Right. So I think there's these other layers that people miss out on. That's why people network terribly wrong, because they're only looking for that end result of, okay, I want that collaboration or I want that sale, but they forget about how are you igniting that relationship at the beginning in order for the fire to continue over time.
100%. I felt like I was left out of the headphone gang, so I felt So I feel like I'm part
of the, club.
Thank you very much. So I just looked up this stat because I heard this stat somewhere, and it goes along with what each of you are saying. One horse alone can pull 8,000 pounds, which is really good. Two horses, when put together, can pull or push. I'm not sure whether it's pull or push, but one of those two things. It's pull. Okay. Pull 24,000 pounds. That's two horses. But if you take those two horses and you train them together to work together over the course of months, maybe even up to a year, maybe longer, they can pull 32,000 pounds. So now two horses together are pulling three times as much weight. And if you think about what we're doing right now, we could have just each done a solo show where Ben talks about collaboration, Christine talks, Andrew talks, and then, you know, I do my thing, and we just put them all together, and we've got these separate shows, and that's cool. But you can only go so far alone. And I know it sounds like a very cliche thing because we hear that all the time. But if you think about why we collaborate in the first place, we collaborate to create something that wouldn't have been able to be created by just one of the two separate pieces alone. We create something special here with the four of us, with what we each contribute, than we each would get if we recorded alone and put them together. And I think collaboration, I'm curious to hear what you guys think. Collaboration, I think, is difficult at times, not because the actual tangible actions are difficult to do, to collaborate each other's schedules and all that stuff. But it's difficult because now you have to communicate in a different way. Like, we have ways of communicating with ourselves, but it's different to communicate with yourself than it is to communicate with other people who have different pasts and different learning styles and different experiences and people who value many different things, who come from different walks of life. And that difficulty is beautiful, yet can be scary at the same time. Because when I do a solo show, there really isn't that much pressure whatsoever, because I know what I'm capable of. I know what I'm going to bring to the table. It's just me and my outline. But when you bring a guest on the show, or even when you have four of us on the show, it brings a whole new level of standard to it, because there's so many more of us in it. It opens up the door for uncertainty of what will happen, what we'll create. So I'm curious to know, like, do you guys also believe that it can be difficult at times to collaborate? And are there ways in which you make that process not easier for yourself, but how do you confront it yourself? And maybe you'll warp this into your own.
Yeah, I'll chime in on this, and we'll go back to kind of group dynamics, right? And I think, you know, for many listening, and for me myself personally, I going through college and being forced to collaborate, there tended to be certain personality types that showed up in groups. There was the slackers, there was the people that were out to get an A and they were going to do most of the work. And then there were those people that never even showed up to the group meeting, and then they just showed up on the last day to get their name on the paper. I think when we go in and collaborate with people, I think it's critical that we know what type of person we're going to be in that setting and what type of person we're not going to be in that setting. Because there's some personality types that they're going to be the doers everywhere. They're going to do it everywhere they go. And there's other people that are, you know, not going to do anything everywhere they go. And there's other people that are just going to flake and they're just never going to show up. But I think for a lot of us, if we're being honest with ourselves, is we show up as those personalities in different collaborations within our lives. Some people are, you know, when in terms of collaborating with a spouse, they may be absent in that, right? They may leave a lot of that to them to figure out. For some people in their jobs, they're the doers. They're always getting it done. But I think what's really interesting is being able to figure out in what scenario you're going to show up in which way, right? And I think this calls a great example where Brandon has taken it on himself to do a little bit more. Right. We're on his little streaming platform. He's sending us the invite. Right. And we're all trying to handle different aspects of it. Right. Sharing with our networks and discussing things in different ways. But, you know, Brandon has intentionally come in to this collaboration knowing what he's going to do. And so I think the knowledge of how you're going to show up in a collaboration and the clarity that everybody else has as far as how you're going to show up, I think that's super, super critical.
That's key. And that's why we asked you, Brandon, because we know you'd over deliver.
So I hate to say this, Can you, you guys can hear me okay right now, right?
You can hear you, yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. These headphones mess things up for me a lot. So as soon as Andrew said my name, my sound cut out and I was like, no, this worst point. And then Ben, you just said what you said. And I'm like, I missed something here. So I apologize.
Inside joke. Don't worry about it.
You can watch it after.
I'll watch it after.
Get the replay. Oh,
man. I can jump off all this. I mean, you mentioned, you know, one horse can lug, push or pull rather, 8,000, and then two can 24 or even more. So imagine what four can do. But what comes with more weight, as you guys have been indicating, what comes with more weight comes more responsibility. So two that are already maxing out at eight together can max out and do 24. But what if one is maxing out at eight and the next person's maxing out at one? And then they're expected to pull 24, but we've got one pulling eight, one pulling one. It definitely creates some friction. I actually don't have a perfect answer for this, so I'm kind of reposing the question. But one thing that I've found is that when you really like the people you're collaborating with, it inspires you to pull more weight. So I might only be pulling one, but I see everyone else around me pulling eight. I'm going to find a way to get to six, and I'm going to find a way. It's kind of like tug of war. If my team's winning, I'm going to do that extra pull to make sure that we win, even if I'm the weakest kid and the smallest kid, which was a fact. Being around people that help you level up and being inspired by people, I feel like can take the weaker in one category. Here's another thing, though. Someone who might be weak in one category might be a creative genius and bring up one idea that completely moves the needle on the plan. So they might be pulling less weight, but they have that creative spark that sparks energy in everybody else. So this is really interesting stuff, and be honest, I don't have an answer, and I'm just kind of happy we're collaborating to find one together right now.
100%. And when it comes to some person pulling this much, another person pulling this much, it's really difficult at times to really gauge the weight that someone is pulling, because I believe each of us individually are pulling weight in very different ways. Like right now with what we're doing, it's very similar because we're doing the same thing. We're sharing ideas. We're having just a conversation in itself. But if we're working on a project together, like as an example with the work that myself, Brian Rollo, and Christine do with Team Elevate, I have my own strengths. Brian's got his strengths and Christine's got her strengths. So much of the time, our conversations together on Zoom or in person will literally be Christine and I going back and forth, taking this idea we have. Christine's excellent and has a superpower of taking an idea and making that idea better in ways that we never could have expected. And then Brian has the superpower of sitting back and just listening, nodding his head, asking questions as we go. And then after Christine and I are done, we're just sweating buckets from the intellectual conversation, at least on her part, at least. Brian then asks more questions and brings his ideas based off what the two of us were talking about and brings a perspective that the two of us even together wouldn't have been able to create ourselves. So I believe it comes to what are your individual strengths? And like, as an example, if Christine and I were the same, then it would be very difficult for us to be business partners together. If all four of us thought the same way, communicated the same way, it'd be very difficult to even get this conversation going. Like if I know that if I need a quick decision made, I'm going to go to Ben, because Ben's going to be able, just like with the titles that we were talking about yesterday, Ben's going to be able to look at several things and be like, let's just roll with this one. And I absolutely love that about Ben, because some people would be like me and they'd look at all three and be like, all three of these could be great. What should we do? But just that decisiveness in itself is a skill. And, you know, I found this working in the corporate world as well. You know, if your partner that you're working alongside within a project or in the same role as you is the same as you, then that's a recipe for disaster. I think it's super important to really ask yourself, what is your superpower and how are you bringing your superpower to the table along with your corporate team, with your family, with your business partners? But in order to do that, you really have to know what is it about you that is special and different that you bring to the table versus others.
Well, I think that's the key, right? Like in order to collaborate or for something to turn into something, right? So the execution on whatever you're collaborating on, you have to be aware enough. And I think most people aren't. Like, that is why they rely on a leader of the group, right? To be able to delegate to them, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, because they would never be the person that would step up and say, I'm going to do this, right? I am that, I was that person in that group to be like, we're going to get an A. So whatever you participate or not, this is what's going to happen because I'm getting an A. So, you know, making sure that that got done, and, you know, that's hasn't changed personality wise, right? Even being the corporate world or owning businesses or working for other companies, you know, I'm all about execution. Okay, well, how is this going to get done? Who's doing it? Well, you guys are going to go back and forth on it. I'm just going to do it. Like, I'm not going to wait for you guys to figure it out because that's a waste of time. And that's just how I operate, right? And I know that's what I bring to the table. I also know that I'm hyper self-aware of what I can offer. And I think being able to recognize that in other people and using it as like a leverage tool in a positive way, like, hey, you're really good at blah, blah, blah. You know, you're really good at speaking, or you're really good at writing, or you're really good at researching. You know, maybe someone's more behind the scenes, but that maybe that's embarrassing for them because they are a business owner. And they're like, I should be front facing. It's like, no, you don't have to be, but you need to work with people who maybe are better at those things so that you could delegate that out to them. And, you know, and how you focus on what you're good at, right? You spend the time on the things that you're good at. And I think that's also why we collaborate with who we collaborate with. Like, that's why the four of us came together, because, you know, we kind of recognize like, hey, this seems like this could go farther and this could be more fun if we had, you know, a fourth person, or, you know, continue moving from there. Like, this could be an in-person thing, right? Like, we do a whole conference on, you know, having these types of conversations, who knows? But again, it still took, you know, us recognizing what that potentially could look like and someone actually saying something.
I love that. And
stay tuned for the conference, guys.
I was trying to say, that's what we're right.
Vegas.
Lunch all day, baby. Lunch all day. For the Superman comment, I love that idea. Just, you know, what's our superpower? You know, what makes each of us the best at something? Because everyone's got their domain that they're extremely skilled at. They're one of a kind talent. And for those listening, if you don't have a one of a kind talent, start developing one, start growing one. Because if you can grow one that people pay for, you can be very successful in life. And how do you know? You know, how do you know what people are willing to pay for? Right. Try and find those people that are like you. Right. If you found that you're really sociable, if you found that you're really good up on stage, lean into that skill because people pay for that skill. Right. If you find that you're really good at solving problems, get better at solving problems and then solve big problems that pay big money. Right. Find those things for you that seem natural, that seem easy, and lean into those things. And another thing I wanted to comment on was, and Christine, you were just talking about, you know, if no one else is going to do it, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to step up and do it. One of the things that I've found through marriage actually is standards. And whoever has the highest standard is the one that will do it. So you had the standard of, I'm going to get an A, so I'm going to do it, right? A lot of times I'd go into a group project and I'd be like, I'm happy with a B-. So my standards were a little bit lower than the high achievers, right?
At least you're honest.
Yeah, no, because for me, you know, I saw college as a vehicle, right? It's a means to an end. It was getting me somewhere. And the coursework was great. It was fine. But I didn't feel the need to get a 4.0. So, but that begs the question is, you know, where do we want to have those top tier standards? And where do we want to have maybe more middling standards? Where is it appropriate? You know, I like the idea of having high standards everywhere, but I feel like it's exhausting. Right. Okay. I'm not wrong. So, you know, cause I look at home, right. Whoever has the highest standard as far as cleanliness in the home, that's the person that's going to sweep the floor. That's the person that's going to do the dishes, right. Because it's going to start getting messy and they're going to say, ooh, this needs to get done. This needs to happen. And so, you know, there's two ways to look at this is, you know, one is, you know, it's just going to fall on the highest standard person, or how can we elevate the standards of other people, right? How can we, and now that we're in a group and we've got, you know, two people that are fine with a B minus, we got one guy that's fine with a D, and we got one person that wants an A, right? How do we start to maybe elevate more and more towards a B plus, right? How can we elevate other people's standards? So I just kind of want to pose that question to you guys. Like, what have you found works as far as helping other people raise their game?
Can I jump in on that? Because I think what you just said was really important. And that is the fact that each of us in the group project, whether it's corporate or anything, we each have a different goal. And I think that goes along with the standards. So Christine saying, okay, well, I'm getting an A on this project. Like, my goal is to do the best possible job in this that I can, because I'm the star student. I want to do very well. I want to get the high grade. And that's part of my and her identity, right? You want to just do the best you can do. But Andrew's goal was, this is a means to the end. My goal is to do this thing after college. So I'm going to go through what I have to go through now, get the best possible grade along with the group. And then that's my main focus, is what happens afterwards. And I think you're completely right. And before I really understood that, and I think that you really just helped solidify that in my mind, it's important for each of us to know what is the goal of everyone that you're working along with on this project. Like, I don't know each of your goals for, as an example, Lunch Break ABCs. Like, we just heard conference from Christine, and that sounds really cool. Like, that's a really cool goal to work towards. And if you're listening, you might be at that conference one day. But I think that if we're going to do that, which we will, we've got to have one really kick-ass lunch break to live up to our name. Can you imagine if we just like brought in these boring finger foods? Like, right. We got to go all out when it comes to lunch.
Enjoy. Break. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll do something really cool. But I had a partner in the corporate world at the very beginning of my leadership career with Verizon, where his goal was very different than my goal. I wanted to take it all the way. I wanted to own my own market within Verizon. So my actions were different than his actions. Him and my next partner were both incredible people. They're both still great friends of mine to this day. But my first partner, his only goal wasn't necessarily to own his own market. He just wanted to make the most amount of money as possible right now because of things that were going on in his life. So his actions looked very different than my actions. His standards were very different than my standards. So one day that partner left that position, and he left me alone in the position of market trainer. And I stayed alone in that role for over a year. And again, like I mentioned earlier, it was great because I knew what I was capable of. I was able to decide what I wanted to decide. I was the one horse pulling 8,000 pounds. And eventually another partner was to come on and join me. And I didn't really know this individual. And my animal brain was at first telling me, this is danger. This is not good. You don't want this person joining you because they're going to change things. You're going to have to do things differently. You're going to have to collaborate. It's going to take longer to do things. And like, you know, that animal part of our brain that's just in survival mode, right? I believed it to be a threat to me. But when that person actually came on, like, I remember talking to them on the phone as an example, and they were asking me questions about the role because they cared about the role. And I was, in a way, we talked about this like years later, but I was in a way trying to dissuade him from taking the role. I was like, oh, you won't get paid as much as you might think. It's going to be a lot more work that's required. You just got this beautiful new wife. You're going to be spending a lot of time away from her on the road. And it didn't work. He still joined and became my partner. And I'm grateful for it, because him and I were able to take this program together and bring it to the next level, because his goal was to own a market of his own. And my goal was to also own a market of my own. So our goals were aligned. Our vision was aligned. So when that alignment occurs, that's when beautiful things really happen. And that's what my first partner in this business and I, we just did not have in common. So we eventually, just by way of the universe, we just went our separate ways. So Andrew, I think you were spot on right there, man. That was very, very wise to point out the importance of knowing what the vision is of each individual component of the group.
I'm curious, guys, for someone who doesn't really know their place, I was this person most of my life. I kind of have a little more clarity now, but I'm still figuring out as we go. When you don't know your place in the group, maybe you don't know your skill set, but you want to show up. Do you guys have any advice or strategies on like how to actually step into your best self and show up and collaborate and connect properly? Is there any way to get a little more clarity on that?
Just do it.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is just showing up.
Yeah.
Is you just show up, right? Because the first group meeting, you probably get 4 out of 5 people to show up, right? That one guy's never going to be there. but then, you know, it's by the 4th or the 5th one where there's 2 people or there's those 3 people that are committed, right? Even if you're not very good, you still showed up and you can find your way to contribute. Whether it's through brainstorming, whether it's through just doing basic tasks, or you start to lean into and find your actual skill set. You know, I think showing up is probably the critical piece, but I'm kind of curious what the other groups members here think.
Yeah. I mean, that's that, like, over the years, I know there was like a question posed earlier about like, how do you, you know, when there's other people that are in different places than you, right? And we could say that about all of us, right? We're all in different places. We're all doing, you know, Brandon and I are having kids at the same time. And, you know, you guys are going in a different direction. And, you know, sometimes just showing up and being respectful and positive to the people that are around you, right? Like, everyone shows up with different experience. Everyone shows up, you know, with different skills and different life experiences, and not everyone has had the opportunities that you have had to maybe grow or be able to really, like, I really know who I am, right? So I think in order to figure those things out, you either try it, like you just try things and like, no, I don't like that. That's not me. Or like, I'm gonna be that person that's gonna speak up. And then you're like, oh, I didn't like it. Or, oh, that was fantastic. It made me feel so amazing, right? I know for me, like, I wasn't always that outspoken person on purpose anyway. It was more like by accident. You know, I got in trouble for talking in school, or, you know, I was that annoying kid that asked a million questions because I wanted to fully understand something before I spent time doing something. But over time, you know, you realize that people don't really care like the things that you do. So like, just practice, because who is going to notice, right? But some things people do notice, right, is just the act of the effort and the time and the communication that you put in. And I don't know about you guys, but I've definitely been in situations where I'm like, I have no idea what they're talking about. I feel really dumb right now. But yeah. I'm like, okay, this can be a learning experience, right? Like, it doesn't mean you can't contribute. I think that's one of the biggest things I see all the time. People don't do certain things because they're like, well, I have nothing to add. I'm like, just because you don't have the degree, just because you don't have that job, you're not a physics professor and they're talking about astrology or astronomy or like the cosmics or whatever, doesn't mean you can't learn something or still contribute in a way that could be asking questions, right? Or like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, could that be something I want to do? Okay, well, what does that look like? How would I ask that question? And I think even just sometimes not doing anything is still something, right? Like, you just absorbing everything is still something, because you're going to take from that experience either positive or negative, right? You liked it, you didn't like it, or it's completely neutral. Like, oh yeah, if it happens again, great. If not, no big deal, right? And I think like that's how you should look at a lot of experience. I think some people are very, like, I'm like Brandon, like something new comes in and I'm like, whoa, Don't change up my jam here. But I've had to realize, like, this isn't a bad thing necessarily. It could mean I learn something new. I become even better at my skill. I can go in a slightly different direction. That's only going to be better. Even if I go off course, that doesn't mean that's a bad thing either. Because none of us can predict where we're going, who we're going to talk to, what our next job is going to be. So letting those opportunities, you know, embrace them as much as you can.
For sure. I want to chime in on something is, you know, we're talking about showing up and an opportunity, and I'll share a story that I actually listened to actually in a podcast. Have you guys ever heard of the guy named Jay Papasan? So he co-authored an extremely famous book with an extremely famous person. And before that happened though, he showed up. He met this famous person and offered to help. He's wanted to be a resource, wanted to be useful, and just said, hey, you know, how can I help you today? You know, I know you're doing big stuff. You know, I've got the small podcast that I have. I've got this other stuff going on. Is there any way I can use my skill set to be useful to you? You know, and I don't think he took him up on the offer right away. So I'm a second time. Same offer. Hey, what can I do to help? Maybe he might have even done a little bit more research. Hey, I think I can help you in this way. You know, is there something I can do here to help move the needle for you on something? Took him up on it, and he did a small little thing for him, and it was awesome. And third time, followed up, said, hey, would love to assist, would love to help in this way. Took him up on it. And what eventually happened is this guy, Jay, ended up co-authoring the book. You can see right behind me over the shoulder, The One Thing, with Gary Keller. So Gary Keller of Keller Williams wrote the book with Jay. And now Jay runs the podcast. He is in charge of a lot of the membership and group stuff that they do. So, you know, Gary Keller built a real estate focused company, and working with Jay helped turn it into a movement, helped turn that methodology and what made them so successful into something bigger than just real estate. Right. Because almost anybody can associate with the book, The One Thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And so for those that have never read it, really distills down to this one line. What is the one thing that you can do that, such that by doing it would make everything else irrelevant or
unnecessary.
Thank you. Yeah. So that's the one thing. That's the question. You know, this got a special name. The focusing question is what that's called. And so the whole book is built around that. Whole business was built around that, right? And that's a many, many tens of millions of dollars business now that he's running. But he started it by being useful, by collaborating, by offering to be helpful. And then an opportunity magically found its way to him. And so, you know, I kind of want to hear maybe from you guys as far as showing up and opportunity, how you guys have seen that play out.
100%. And what you said, though, is very important. And it goes back to, what if you don't know your strength? And we said, show up. Both of us said that. But then you said, okay, Jay looked at Gary Keller and asked, how can I be of service, over and over and over? He showed that persistence, which reminds me of when Napoleon Hill asked Henry Ford, or not Henry Ford, Dale Carnegie, right? Was it Dale Carnegie? Yeah, okay. He asked Dale Carnegie, how can I be of service to you? And Dale Carnegie said, well, you can take this 20-year journey and go interview the world's top minds in finances and ask them, how is it that you grew rich, which turned into the book that all of us know, Think and Grow Rich. But he wouldn't have done that if he didn't ask the question, how can I help you? And I think this breaks off into two pieces. The first piece is, if you don't know how to best contribute to the group, rather than just stay in the shadows and, you know, just do the bare minimum, maybe you pull the 4,000 pounds of weight, why not step up and say, how can I best contribute to the group? Now, obviously, people will have to kind of know you to know what your superpowers are, to know what your strengths are. But it's very interesting how we find it difficult at times to be introspective on what we are strong in. But when we ask other people, they're so easily able to say, well, Ben, you're great at doing this. Christine, you're great at doing this. Andrew, you're great at this. And you can take one of those things and latch onto it and be of service to other people. But I think it's even taking it a step further, and I'm sure Jay did this when he talked to Gary Keller about the book. He probably just didn't say, Gary, how can I help you, when Gary had no idea what Jay did. He likely saw a gap somewhere in Gary's strategy, or knew of something that Gary wanted to achieve, and offered his services to Gary. Like Napoleon Hill knew he was a great journalist. He knew he was a great interviewer. So he didn't just say, how can I help you, Dale Carnegie? Dale Carnegie said, I would like you to take these skills and go use them in this specific way. And it reminds me of a lot of people who want to move up into leadership within the company that they're in. They always ask, I want to do more. How can I do more? But what if instead you ask them, hey, based on all these different projects I've worked on and all these different things I did, what do you see as a superpower in me? And then they tell you. And then you say, great, well, can I use that superpower on this new up-and-coming project that you just talked about in the last meeting? And they're going to say, yeah, Christine, we don't know how we can pay you for it yet, but we would love for you to take this on and take charge of the project in this way. And then you do. And then you add value. And then you're paid, whether it's monetarily or in many different ways, and you're sent on a path that you couldn't imagine. And I'm sure that's the same thing that happened with Jay, with Gary. And we know it's the same thing that happened with Napoleon, with Dale Carnegie.
It's powerful stuff. I'm happy I let you guys talk, because you guys answered like what was in my head as the follow-up question. Because when I hear just show up, to me that's not enough, because there's people that show up and work 60-hour weeks, but they are still stuck in the rat race and they never find something that they're passionate about, never work their way up into a leadership role. And what you guys are talking about is beyond. So just showing up is massively important. I know, being a big like music fan and coming from the music industry, part of what I love about live music, especially at like a small venue, is the collaboration between like the band and the audience. And like you can song requests, and just the band kind of just like creates an energy in the room, and there's like a collaboration that happens, and there's value in that. But then the next level is, how do I show up as a leader and add value that didn't exist already? And I feel like you guys really dissected like that next step. Like the first step is, let's physically show up. Second step is, how do I add value intentionally? How do I, you know, bring value to this? Transparently, a lot of my clients come from me just being physically present. And a lot of people want to be omnipresent. It's often talked about in marketing and social media. Be on all platforms, always be in their feed, keep their attention. That can be overwhelming, and it's even slightly more overwhelming but more powerful when you're physically present. I know I'm an information junkie. I'm in 3 different mastermind groups that all have speakers come in. And part of why I do it is, I show up every time. There's a new speaker oftentimes, and then I get to meet that speaker, and I build a relationship with the host of the group. I can create a relationship with the speaker and connect with them. And the accountability of just showing up, but then bringing value when I show up, clients come through just referrals in being part of this group and being an active member. My whole point here is that it's not like you just show up to collaborate once. Like, I got an A on the first thing together. I'm crushing it. I'm God's gift to the world. We need to show up and collaborate every freaking day. And we can take off days. And you don't have to be like, listen to Ben, who's 3 mastermind groups and is always in attendance. That's kind of insane. But what's your version of that, where you can show up and collaborate, where you're always delivering, like, you're delivering your part in your own special way? And I kind of want to rephrase the question, because I don't know if we totally answered it. How do we know what our superpower is? How do we know when we're showing up to collaborate what our gift is? Is it as simple as like kind of what Brandon said, asking someone in leadership, like, where's my best place? But is there a probability that if you just ask leadership where your best place is, they can say, well, your best place is in the bathroom scrubbing the toilets?
That's your special talent.
Like, how do we know when to walk away because it's not in alignment? And how do we know what our gift is? Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Oh, I got tons, but it sounds like Christine's going to go.
No, it's okay. I don't have to talk the entire time.
So I'll share a little bit of my story. Is, you know, for me, for a while in my life, the only thing I felt like I was good at was drinking. I was really good at that. and I wasn't even that good at like drinking. It was just, I was really good at getting drunk, right? which honestly is not that great of a skill. So, you know, for a while, I had very low esteem, right? As far as how well I thought I could contribute in areas of my life that mattered. And it took me a while and a lot of soul searching and figuring things out. And honestly, I could say probably the 2 things that have helped the most as far as like figuring out what am I good at, what value can I add, has been feedback from other people. And that's typically in the form of compliments. And people are going to compliment you on the things that are noticeable. And so for me, I get complimented on my energy very frequently. Energy, like all the time. And it took me years for that to kind of like sink in as like, oh, energy is like a thing that like not everybody has. Like not everybody brings this type of energy to what they do. oh, okay. Like, you know, bing, bing, bing. Like that to me is one of my superpowers, is bringing that type of energy. And then probably the second place that I've discovered a lot has been through personality tests. And like, none of them are accurate in the sense that none of them are 100% true. None of them are 100% going to get you to what you need to know. But doing enough of them will teach you the themes that keep showing up. You'll learn about yourself through each one. And as a whole, you'll get a better picture of what's going on. So I'm not going to say, oh, you got to do Myers-Briggs, or you got to do DISC, or you got to do this one or that one. I've done most of them. and I could say I've learned something from each of them. And there's no one that is better than the others. There's going to teach you something a little bit different. And through each of those, though, I saw that there were certain themes that showed up. And then it's, okay, so I've got a lot of good energy. I'm really good at interacting with people, and I'm good at problem solving. Those are some of the big things that I've discovered. And so looking at my career, looking at my business, looking at what I want to do as far as contribute, how am I going to add value to people, is now taking those things and leveraging those. And instead of like shoring up more of my weaknesses, instead of getting better at managing my calendar, which I suck at, I'm going to outsource some of that. I'm going to either have somebody help me, or I'm going to rely heavily on a calendar app, or I'm going to find a system that can take care of that for me. And I'm going to get better at speaking. I'm going to get better at showing up with good energy. I'm going to get better at solving particular problems. And so kind of that self-discovery then leads into doubling down, is what my recommendation would be for people, is once you start hearing about what people are complimenting you on and people are noticing, do more of that. Do it again.
Well said,
brother. Well said, for sure. Yeah. I would add, so self-discovery, I think, is really important. And I think it should be clarified that you may not have just one superpower either. You may have multiple, and they may be very different from each other. Like, you may not just be a good, you know, connector and networker and marketer. Like, you could be a good cook, or like there could be other skills, right, that don't have any relation to each other. But I think Andrew made a good point. Like, listen to what other people have to say, but I would do that with a grain of salt, because there are definitely people who are going to say, like, you will never, like, I can't even tell you how much that has happened to me. Especially being a woman in predominantly male industries. I've definitely had people that are like, you'll never do blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, oh yeah, watch me. Yeah, so, you know, thinking about what people say and the right people, I think, is the difference. Like the people that support you, and they're not just blowing smoke up your butt either. Like, you don't want that type of response. You want people to be like, no, I think you're really good at blah, blah, blah. You should continue doing those things. I also think you should think about how it makes you feel. So Andrew kind of mentioned the whole energy side, but there's an energy that we all have, and you might get ramped up after certain situations. So it could be after a phone call, it could be after a podcast, it could be after a project that you finished. Even while you're doing it, even if you have like the feelings of like, oh, that gave me so much anxiety, it was so stressful, but afterwards you feel like $1 million because of how the presentation went with the client, like, you should really think about those things. Like, what are these clear times in your life that you had these overwhelming feelings of like happiness, and like you were so proud of yourself, and like everyone was gushing about you, and you were like, you just couldn't help but like smile from ear to ear. Like, that's a really good indicator. That's probably a skill that you're really good at. So, and it could be something that I think people also think skills are a very tangible thing. Like, oh, I can do this. Like, I'm really good at, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, cooking or, you know, cleaning or whatever, but it could be like how you make someone feel, or how you communicate, or like you're a really good listener. Like, those are still skills. It just may not necessarily equate to like a product or service. So, you know, thinking about those types of things, I think the personality tests are a great idea. I know for me, like, they're pretty accurate. Like, you know, I did the one that I did one with actually Brian Rollo, and this was through, I can't even think of what it's called right now.
Culture talk, right?
What?
Culture Talk.
Yeah. So I did through Culture Talk. So it was like a very, it was a pretty deep like evaluation. And I'm a creator, like is my
surprise.
First thing. Ooh, big surprise. Yeah. But also ruler was like the second one.
No.
And then something along lines of like educator or teacher. So, and like those three things like heavily encapsulate like myself as a person. Like I'm very much into leadership, but I also really like helping people. So it's something that kind of fights back and forth because I do like to be the boss. I do like to tell people what to do, but I also really like to be like, how can I help you? How can mm-hmm. I make this better? Okay, well, we're going to find a solution. Like I love problem solving. It's very addicting for me. So, you know, that might be super helpful to give you that open door, like, oh, hey, maybe I'm this, or maybe these are some things that I'm good at. Okay, let me practice more. Let me dive more into that. Or let me talk to my friends and family or, you know, the people that I'm around and be like, hey, is this true? Like, do you think I'm good at blah, blah, blah? You know, and then take it for how it actually makes you feel.
So not to take this to a really gross place, but I remember,
oh boy, I'm excited.
Go along with what Ben said about, you know, oh, you want to know what you can do? Well, here's the scrubber. Go to the bathroom and make them look nice, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I was at a layover in Atlanta. It was a layover in Atlanta, Georgia. And I remember going into the bathroom after
they're
getting
nasty. Oh, they're just nasty. Go ahead.
So funny you say that, because this one particular time I went into the bathroom at the airport, which are normally nasty, and this was the most pristine environment I've ever seen.
Interesting.
And I was like, what's going on here? And this very kind older gentleman comes over to me and he's like, sir, welcome to my office, is what he said to me. Yes. Verbatim, welcome to my office. And I'm like, this is getting really weird. It's like, dude, I just got to go to the bathroom and I'm out of your hair. And he's like, let me bring you to where you're looking to go. And he brought me to a stall, opened the door to the stall and closed it behind me. I swear to God. And I was like, this is really bizarre. As everyone walked out of the stall, he brought them to the sink to wash their hands. He led them out and he went right into the stall immediately, cleaned up whatever was there. Again, the gross place. And then he led the next person to that stall. And I remember leaving. I tipped him before I left, by the way, like a couple bucks, nothing crazy, but he had a tip jar. I tipped him before I left. And then I was like thinking to myself the rest of that day, I was like, this guy is the best bathroom cleaner that I've ever met in my life. The mm-hmm. best, the greatest. If I had a bathroom to clean, I'd be calling this man. And it reminds me of when I was looking to move up into leadership. And I asked the question, what can I do? And my leader at the time said, well, Brandon, one thing I've observed about you is you're really good at handling angry customers. Mm-hmm. And I said, really? And he's like, yeah. He's like, what I would like to do is I would like you to be the person who fields all the phone calls.
Oh, and great.
And it was a retail store. So the people that walked in angry, he's like, I would like you to field those situations and help the reps out. And when that happens,
hello, Karen, my name is Brandon.
Yep. Literally though. And I was thinking what the bathroom cleaner probably thought when he was asked to do this. But the point of this is I started to ask myself, why am I really good at de-escalating these angry people who have high bills, who feel like they were misled in some way, who come in really hot, really angry. And by the end of it, they were apologizing to me and thanking me. It was very, very bizarre how one person can be from here and go to here in the course of 5 minutes, literally 5 minutes. And I started to ask myself, what is it about that I'm very good at? Like the bathroom cleaner, he could have dissected, what am I really good at in this case? Well, I'm great at leading people through an experience. When they enter the bathroom, I'm great at leading them to where they need to go next. I'm really great at attention to detail, really making that place look brand new, even years and years into it being created. When it comes to me with the angry customers, I was really good at just shutting up and listening to those people. And then also helping de-escalate them with my own tone, with the way that I talked, with my body language. So I didn't just stay there forever like a lot of people might. The bathroom cleaner might be doing that forever. Maybe he loves it. I don't know. I didn't love just helping angry people all the time. So I took those skills and I said, hey, Keith, my leader at the time, I was like, I've discovered that I'm good at this because I'm great at de-escalating people and helping them feel better. And I'm also great at educating them on what they didn't know before they came in all angry. How else can I use this? And then it led to what I love to do, which is training groups of salespeople, training groups of people, educating people, helping them live better lives. So I took the minute details of the superpower and then used those in other facets that I enjoyed more that were more aligned with my purpose. Mm. So, you know, I use those stories to say, dig into what you're really good at, find those one or two pieces that can translate into anything, and then just focus on those little teeny pieces in your superpower. And I think you can use them literally in any situation in your life.
Amen.
Yes.
Guys, do we have time for one more takeaway from the group?
Let's go.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Who wants to start?
I think you're talking, so let's hear it, brother.
Okay, let me think about this one. It's funny. I realize I started the conversation with we connect, but collaboration. Wait, how did I start the conversation? You can collaborate, but be disconnected and transactional. In connection is really what makes it more of a emotional and valuable experience. I feel like I could flip it on its head. We know LinkedIn, I presume most of the listeners know on LinkedIn, a friend request is called a connection request. So you can connect with somebody, but did you actually connect? Hmm. You can say you love somebody, but did you actually show them that you love them? So I feel like the collaboration is the next step. We connect because we want to. But am I going to connect with someone just to pitch them or talk about myself or try to steal value from them? How can we bring collaboration in where our connections aren't shallow and transactional? We can actually collaborate to do something good. And I'm preaching to the choir because that's exactly what we get to do with you three. And I'm excited to do this every month. Like Andrew, man, I'll move meetings away. Dog has to pee, she can pee on the ground. I'm just kidding. But
I'm gonna drink water.
Steven almost got a spit take there. That was great.
All right, next up.
I love it. I'll chime in. So, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about has been the collaboration aspect, and within collaboration, figuring out how you can collaborate best, what value you can add to a person or to a group or to a connection that you have. And one of the things that I think about sometimes is the whole passion hypothesis, right? That you follow your passion and you can do whatever you want, right? Read an interesting book recently. It was called So Good They Can't Ignore You. Would highly, highly recommend it. Fantastic book. And what he goes through in the book is the idea that the passion hypothesis in a lot of ways steers people wrong because, you know, kind of like Christine was talking about earlier, you may have skills and passions in a lot of really unique and interesting areas. But just because you have a passion there does not mean that people are willing to pay for it. Does not mean that you can monetize that. Does not mean that that can enhance your career. It may enhance your life, but it may not enhance your business. It may not enhance your career. And so I think there's kind of three major factors that play into how you can add value to the world, how you can add value to your connections, and how you can add value to your collaborations. And one of those things is your passion, because if you care and you give a lot to it, you can make an outsized impact. But before you can get to passion, the author here, I forget the guy's name. We'll leave it. But the author argues that to get to passion, you need to have skills. And really getting good at particular skills is how you can actually become passionate about something. And I think we can, you know, all harken back to a time when we knew kind of that bohemian kind of personality where it's like, man, I'm just going to do this and it's going to be awesome. It's going to be great. And they kind of like start getting to where the rubber meets the road. And they're like, they're not able to actually make an impact. They're not able to actually make a difference. They're not actually doing anything that's adding value to people. And it's because they got so invested in this whole passion idea. I'm passionate about saving the whales. Great. What kind of skill set do you have that can help whales? You know what I mean? Like, what kind of skill set do you have that's going to help the oceans? Right? What are you going to bring to that equation?
I can right? share articles, Andrew.
Right. I'm going to repost. I'm not going to say mean things to people. Right? That's my skill. But you look at that, right? And it takes skills. And skills, you can build some of that passion. And then the other piece of that is, what are people willing to pay for? What are people currently paying for, right? And that's where you're going to be able to add value, right? And when I say pay for, right, it's could be paid via attention, could be paid via cash, could be paid via promotion or opportunities, right? There's all kinds of ways to get paid in that particular way, right? But, you know, there's in order to add value, you need all three of those aspects to really do it well. And really, at the end of the day, you just need a skill that you can get really, really good at and that you can and use that to then invest in people in a way that matters, a way that they're looking for, a way that they need help.
Let's go save the whales.
Save the whales, baby.
Boom, baby.
Let's hear yours, Christine. What was your top takeaway or last final thoughts?
I feel like you guys have kind of like done a good job summarizing everything. I think I'll just piggyback on what, you know, Andrew was saying. And, you know, I think to figure things out, I think that whatever that skill might be, right, a good start, one of the things I teach in networking is to be a resource, right? You won't know if people want to collaborate with you until you open the door. And I think it's always a good opportunity to really think in that way, right? Like, I don't know what's going to happen if I have a conversation with this person. It's not going to hurt you, right? In most cases, but really figuring out like what opportunities could come out of this conversation, this event, and then, you know, using that as a learning tool every single time, right? Could I learn something about myself? Could I learn something about someone else? Could I use that as a tool or a stepping stone to get to that next spot? And I think, you know, you might figure out what that skill is a lot sooner, but, you know, leading by example, right, is always a good thing. And, you know, being that resource, that was really how I kind of became, you know, the Obi-Wan Kenobi of networking. It wasn't something I intentionally realized I was even good at. It was just like, well, how can I help you? And I was like, well, I get more attention when I connect people to other people because it was just easy to do and no one else was doing it. And then it kind of came a thing. To just do that on a regular basis. And everyone's like, well, you know, everybody, you can help me. And I'm like, I can. Yeah. So
I love that. I think this final thought for me is kind of out of left field, but I think it ties directly into collaboration. It comes from the first chapter of one of the most impactful books that I've ever read, The 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene. Have any of you read that book? Okay, excellent. The audiobook's great too. The first chapter is never outshine the master. And it's like kind of dark. A lot of these chapters are dark. A lot of it goes into human nature, the ego, all these things. And when I first read it, I was like, never outshine the master. What does that mean? Well, when I was in my role of leadership director, where I helped future team leads become team leads at Verizon, one of the number one questions I heard is how can I stand out to leadership and rise up into leadership? And one of the struggles that these individuals faced when they were attempting to collaborate with their leader is many of their leaders felt threatened when the member of the team started to rise up and started to do more and started to add value and started to get noticed. Because one of the last things that you want to do is be noticed more than your direct leader. And is it always the case? Not always. Although I would argue that it's most of the time because we're dealing with egos here, especially in the corporate world, which is where I come from, right? A little bit different in business, but still human nature is prevalent everywhere. And what I always advised these individuals who wanted to move up into leadership is make your leader look as amazing as you possibly can. Help to solve all their problems. Help them achieve their goals. Help to add value to them. If you can directly help and collaborate with your leader, ask what they need help with, look and find the gaps yourself and help to fill them in, all the while giving them the credit for the advances that you've helped create, that's how you move up, right? A lot of people even say, oh, I want to move up into this leadership position, but someone's already there. How can I do it if that spot's already taken? Well, help that person move up. Help that person get promoted. Help that person take the next step so you can rise up to that point or move and zigzag to a different role that you never even would have expected to be there. But never outshine the master, because if you do, they'll feel threatened. They will oust you and then it's going to be tough to collaborate on a team that you no longer exist. Kind of a dark twist there, but very relevant and very applicable to real life. And I respect each of you greatly. I respect each of your final thoughts. Grateful to be part of this group with you. I hope everyone listening had a takeaway of their own. Please leave a comment wherever you're watching and listening. Let us know what your takeaway was, because in a few weeks, we're going to release our next poll. It's going to be on the letter D. It's going to be our fourth lunch break ABC. So I'm not sure what those words will be yet, but keep an eye out. Ben, you usually post those. So everyone be sure you're following each of us, but definitely make sure you're following Ben Albert so you can see that next poll that we'll share to our page as well. Thank you so much for watching and listening. And it was awesome to be a part of this with the three of you, as always.